That's the... So we conclude the morning with Psalm 131. Beautiful psalm. The psalmist is humbly aware of his limitations and dependence on God. His confidence isn't based on himself, but on God's presence and care for him. So he's not self-focused or thinking he's great. He says, Yahweh, my heart is not proud. A haughty spirit, my eyes are not raised too high. I don't occupy myself with things too great or too marvelous for me. Proverbs 16, perhaps a comment, pride goes before the fall. That's where we learned all that. And a haughty spirit before a fall. It's better to be of a lowly spirit among the poor than to divide the spoil with the proud. Psalm 101.
What is this? It's not on me.
Psalm 101 verse 5 is a haughty look and an arrogant heart I will not tolerate. Still commenting, Isaiah chapter 2. People are humbled and everyone is brought low. Do not forgive them. Enter into the rock and hide in the dust from the terror of Yahweh and from the glory of his majesty. The haughty eyes of people shall be brought low, and the pride of everyone shall be humbled. For Yahweh alone will be exalted on that day. Against all that is proud and lofty, against all that is lifted up and high, against all the cedars of Lebanon, lofty and lifted up, against all the oaks of Bashan, against all the high mountains and all the lofty hills, against every high tower and against every fortified wall, against all the ships of Tarshish, ships that took to the open sea in the Mediterranean, went as far as Spain, Tartessos in Spain, may be the reason that it's called Tarshish, or it may be just the islands in the Greek Isles, as we call them today. That area too was called Tarshish, so it's a bit tricky. But anyhow, we know they were big ships that didn't lug along the coast, go from little port to port, but dared the open sea, which the Mediterranean can get quite stormy, as you well know. And against all the beautiful craft, the haughtiness of people shall be humbled, and the pride of everyone shall be brought low, and Yahweh alone will be exalted on that day. And I think that Isaiah was writing this against the mighty in his own country who were making alliances that were bringing detriment to his own country, that rings bells, and were abusing their position of power and getting wealth while the poor got poorer and so on. Verse 2 of this simple little psalm reads, I have quieted myself down and stilled all my longing. That's the best way I can translate the Hebrew for you. Myself in that sentence and all my longing translate the same Hebrew word, which nephesh, which is so common in the Bible and so impossible to translate. It means I, or me, depending on where it is in the sentence, but it's more than that. It's the whole of me. It's what I've tried to say. It's me as a longing person, me as needing and longing and wanting, and it's got all that feel about it. Sometimes it's translated my soul. I've quieted my soul, but soul is a pretty impossible word in English. I mean, what on earth is your soul? If you think of soul and body as two separate things, well, you're bizarre. You've gone into some metaphysical nonsense. So what are you talking about? And yet I remember seeing your soul, when you die, your body goes into the grave and your soul goes in heaven and waits for the end of the world. What is your soul, for heaven's sake? I'm only me, you know. It's all very tricky philosophically. So I don't like using the word soul because I actually don't know what it means, and I know no one else knows what it means. And if you do know what it means, you're wrong. So we better start with, so it's me, it's myself, it's my whole, well, like that, yeah, that's, I'll say it again. I have quieted myself down and stilled all my longing. Now, this is quite interesting, though not particularly commenting on our psalm, but on the way the psalm has been used. In place of the word quieted, the first verb there in the Hebrew, the Greek Septuagint has humbled. And it's one of only two texts in the Septuagint that use that verb tapeno phroneo. Tapenos, the first part of that verb means low as distinct from high. You've got the high mountains and then you've got the lowlands. Tapenos is the word used for the low. That's simple. Phroneo, phrein, is the brain, the mind. Phroneo means thinking. So tapeno phroneo means thinking of myself as low. That's the best way I can put the whole thing for you. But it only occurs in two texts in the whole of the Septuagint. Here, in the Greek of this sentence, I've humbled myself and stilled all my longing. But that's not what the Hebrew says, anyhow, the Greek says it. And the only other text is Proverbs chapter 29, verse 23, who speaks, uses the participle from that verb, one who is tapenophronos, lowly in spirit, lowly in thinking, thinking of themselves in a lowly way, they will obtain honour. So they're the only two texts. What you might be interested in is, what I found quite fascinating, was that you search the Greek accordances in vain to find the noun, tapeno phrosune. That word, to the best of my knowledge, and I've exhausted my study of it, and other people who thought it wasn't true tried to prove it untrue and can't, so maybe I'm right, maybe this is it. Tapeno phrosune first appears in Greek in St. Paul's letters in the first century. There's no older text, and that means humility. So there's words like lowly in the Old Testament Septuagint, but not humility. And my guess is that tapeno phrosune, humility, is a unique Christian virtue. Now, this is close to it, obviously using the verb, and I can't think of any other reason for it, if that's the case. There's a few ifs here, but if that is truly the case, it must go back to Jesus. And in the first century after Paul, Josephus, who else? Epictetus and Plotinus, I think, use the word tapeno phrosune. That's in the late first century, or middle to late first century. They use the word too, but only ever as a vice, never as a virtue. Because for the Greek, to think of yourself, it's a bit like we have low self-image, which is not a good thing to have. That's the same as they thought, to think of yourself, no, you've got to be a man, you've got to, you know, you've got to be, have a positive view of yourself, you've got to sell yourself, you've got to, all this self stuff. There's self-help books all around the place today, don't read them, for God's sake, don't bother. Just become humble and beautiful and gentle and come to communion. Because all the self-help books just make you stand on stilts and you'll soon fall over, I think. I mean, I'm saying too much, but there's a lot of egocentric stuff around today that substitutes for general spirituality and general love and, you know, the real thing. It's an easy way to make yourself better, appear better to others, I think, a lot of it. And it doesn't work, because anyone who's anyone sees through it at a flash. Don't you? You're there to employ someone and they come along for a job and they say, I'm good at this and I'm terrific at that and I'm wonderful at this and I'm the best at that and I've done this and I'm terrific at this and I've done that. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, I won't be employing this person because I want them to know they don't know, because there's a lot to learn. Whereas if someone comes along and they're keen and they're interested and they're willing to learn and they know what they don't know and they're in touch with themselves, I'll employ them because I reckon they're the person that's got, they're real. Do you get me? Now, I'm not the only employer in the world, but I suspect aren't you the same? Don't you see through a lot of this selling of yourself? Oh God, how do I get onto that? Anyhow, humility, Jesus, because Jesus, see, he thought of himself. To think of yourself as low doesn't sound good until you see the way Jesus did it. And the way he did it, come back to this. This psalm is very close. Jesus said, unless you're like a little child, you'll never enter. So he didn't want to put ourselves down. He wanted us to be realize that we have a father, a mother in heaven who loves us. So you don't have to be everything on your own. You can be poor. You can be incompetent. You can be sinful. You can be a lot of things because there's something bigger than you around that loves you. So get on with it. Live. You know. So that was humility was not low self-image. It's the reverse side of recognizing God as Abba. Unless you become as a little child, you cannot enter the kingdom, he said. And you know that from looking at little children. Little children's beautiful. Now, we've got to grow up. But as we grow up, we don't build up our ego. We build up our... The child within us stays there. And we're willing to be little. Teresa of Lisieux, beautiful saint with all of that. So Jesus witnessed to a virtue that no one had ever seen before. This capacity to just be yourself. And says, look, I'm not saying I'm equal to God. He said, I only do what my father tells me. I'm always pleasing my father. I mean, Jesus wanted, he said, I'm the way. I'm not the goal. I'm the way to the one. Come with me. Let's walk together, you know. So what did we do? We shoved Jesus up on a big pedestal and then we can't seem to deal with the ordinary too well. We're human beings. We need to put things on pedestals and worship them or something. It's a bit odd, isn't it? And there's poor Jesus who's just saying, oh, come on. Here it is. Here's the image. Like a two-year-old, really. That's the Hebrew. A weaned child. So it's not a little baby at the breast, sucking at the breast. It's a two-year-old with its mother. And you see them. It's lovely. I get this every week, so I'm such a privileged position to be a priest. You're there in all your vestments, and mum or dad comes in with the two-year-old, and mum says, say hello to father. And the little child wisely creeps around the back and hides behind a skirt or a trouser leg or something. And you think, the dear little thing, that's great. And some of them don't. It depends on their temperament. But that's what you've got here. You've got an image of a little frightened little kid, and mum's there, or in this case, it could be dad. But that's okay, they're safe there. Now, look at it, because we often misread this psalm. My desires are like the weaned child that is with me. So, in other words, the author isn't liking God to a mother and himself to a two-year-old. The author is saying, my feelings of disturbance are like a little two-year-old. You know, we all get a bit iffy in here. And just as a mother says to a little child, it's okay, it's all right, darling, you know, whatever. So I'm saying to myself, it's all right, relax, take it easy, it's okay. Talk to yourself, talk to the little child, because my desires are all a bit over the place and anxieties, etc. So just as a mother calms a two-year-old, so the psalmist claims, calms his desires, his irrational fears and the turmoil of his feelings. And by extension, one can see God as a mother and the psalmist as a child being calmed by God, but that's not what the psalm is saying. It's actually talking about calming himself by telling myself that God is love. But here we have some nice images of God as a mother. Hosea 3, it was I, or a father, it was I who taught Ephraim to walk. Ephraim, northern kingdom. I took them up in my arms. I led them with cords of human kindness, with bands of love. I was to them like those who lift infants to their cheek. I bent down and fed them. Oh, beautiful image. That's God. That's the image of God in Hosea. Psalm 22, the prayer that Jesus prayed on the cross begins, my God, why have you abandoned me? And it goes on, it was you who took me from the womb. You kept me safe on my mother's breast. On you, that's the mother, on you I was cast from my birth, and that was their practice. The father, when the baby was just born, the baby would be placed on the lap of the dad, because you know who the mother is, it's totally obvious, but who's the dad? And the dad would say, this is my child. So that was the owning of the child by the dad, placed on the lap. So it uses that image as well. Since my mother bore me, you have been my God. And that's what Jesus is praying on the cross. Psalm 22. You, Yahweh, are my hope, my trust, Yahweh, from my youth. Isaiah 66. You shall be suckled and be carried on her arm and dandled on her knees. As a mother comforts her child, I will comfort you. You shall be comforted in Jerusalem. An image that we all know. And here's Jesus. I've said something already. I'll just run through it. This is Matthew and Luke. Truly I tell you, unless you change and become like children, you'll never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever becomes humble like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And the Greek there is not technically humble, it's lowly. I mean, it's tapenos. It's okay, but it's not the technical word for humility. Here's Jesus in Luke. I thank you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you've hidden these things from the wise and intelligent and have revealed them to infants. And that's a perfect translation of the Greek. New Testament written in Greek, of course. Infants, in English, means not able to speak. Nepios in Greek. So an infant is a child that can't yet speak, so I suppose, in the early first 12 months of life or whatever. Father, for such was your gracious will. Matthew, all you who exalt themselves will be humbled. You who humble yourself will be exalted. And so the psalm ends, and I end. Israel, hope in Yahweh now and forever. In other words, you don't build yourself up, you don't pretend, you don't have to be better than you are, you don't have to be different to you are. You have to learn to be yourself, of course, and let go of sin and distractions and be your beautiful self. But that's what he's telling his feelings inside. Just try and be yourself. It's okay. God loves you. So put your faith in Yahweh, and that's the thing that'll calm you down and keep you in touch. And the book of Lamentations, which I quoted on the weekend too, I think. It is good that you should wait quietly for Yahweh to save.